Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, you know, it's never good when you turn on the radio and you hear Jim Jackson's first words say, "And this one's trouble," right? That's just, that's never a good sign. Good morning, everybody. With Ray Dinger, I'm Glenn Mack now. We are at Citizens Bank Ballpark, NovaCare broadcast booth as later today, 105 start. The Phillies take on the San Diego Padres. Phillies lose last night. Ray, they are not going to go undefeated with Charlie as hitting coach. I'm sorry to tell you.
I know. And I was starting to think that was a possibility.
Yeah, well, anyway. Although the JT Real Surgeons continues, which was very nice to see.
Yeah, he's hitting the ball.
He is. And what does that mean?
Well, it's good things for me.
That's, go ahead.
Come on. Hey, look, I'll look out for number one. Nobody else will. Our bet, our stupid baseball bet, which is home runs by new Phillies versus home runs by
holdovers,
Letterman, let's say, has tilted in my favor in the last couple of weeks, as Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto have heated up here. I've actually surged into the lead.
Yes, and Rhys Hoskins has gone into the witness protection league. So,
joining Scott Kingery.
Joining Scott Kingery, and oh, where are you, O'Double? Yes, that bet's looking a lot better for you right now than it was.
And we know where Mikel Franco is. He's nowhere he can help you.
No, I don't get the points in Lehigh. Anyway, we are at Citizens Bank Park. Ray and Glenn, we are here till noon. I'm going to stick around for the pregame show after that. We have a lot we're going to cover today. We're going to get into Josh McCown and the Eagles changing quarterback situation. Ray, we are going to work on clarifying our stupid football bet for the year today. We need to do that. And when do I want to do this? I think I'm doing this at 10:45, Ray. I have something I heard in the world of sports that's going to make you slap your head in disgust. You just have to promise to do it next to the microphone so the audience can hear it. Here's what you're going to say at 10:45. I'm going to tell you, like, so Ray, I heard this story, blah, 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 and you're going to go,
I am?
Are you kidding me? Is that what the world has come to? I can't believe that we have entered an era of that. Yeah, that's
what
my
I'm
imitation
say?
Of you. Yeah, in about 45 minutes. Hmm. Yeah, you're going to be completely disgusted with
well,
this.
Well, just do I get any kind of a preview, or are you just going
to
hit me with a cold?
Okay, you ready? Here's the preview. Here's the tease. Your pal Governor Rendell is correct. That's the only tease I give you.
Generally, he's correct almost all the time. As
well,
far as I
on
can
this
tell.
On this one, his assessment would prove to be correct. All right, okay. But I want to start by talking about last night's Phillies game and kind of what it means in the bigger picture. By the way, 888-729-9494, 888-729-9494. We like to take calls on Sunday. Actually, more to be honest with you, Saturday is the day that Ray and I catch up with each other, haven't seen each other for the week, so we just chat. Sunday we take more calls. So if you want to call, we promise we will get you in early and often. This is my takeaway from last night as the Phillies lose 5-3 to the Padres. Phillies have a 3-0 lead and then cannot hold it. And, Ray, I think there's still going to be nights where they need their pitching to lead the way. And
sure.
With a rotation of Nola and the four Mysterians, you're going to get too many nights like last night. You know, three runs, you're not going to win a ton of games scoring three runs, but you got to win occasionally when you score three runs. And they had no chance. Last night, they needed the pitching to carry them. They are a game out of the second wild card. They won four in a row. They haven't won five in a row. And they needed Zach Eflin, or after him, Nick Pivetta, to kind of hold the fort.
Right. And they did.
And
that's why, you know, we spent a good deal yesterday's show talking about, okay, now they're really back in the wild card thing, and they're right there. What do you think the chances are of them getting in? And I said, look, I'm rooting for them. I would love to see them do it. I don't think they're going to do it. And last night was exhibit A, B, C, and D as to why I don't think they're going to do it. You lose a game to a bad team, and they have lost way too many games to bad teams this year. Way, way, way too many. And it's the worst kind of loss to a bad team in that you jump out ahead at home, and you wind up letting that bad team come back and beat you in your own ballpark, and purely because of bad pitching. And that's what's going to trip them up. You look back over all the games they've lost this year to the Miamis and now San Diego, and you lose to the White Sox and
Pittsburgh. I think they lost a few.
And Pittsburgh. Earlier, yeah. I mean, they've lost way too many games to bad teams. And I think in the end, when you come right down to it, and because of the mathematics, they'll probably be sort of hanging around going to the end of September. But I think they're going to come up short. And when they come up short, what you're going to look back on is, boy, those half a dozen games that are bullpen blue against bad teams, that was the difference. And I think that's what you saw last night. You get this Padres team down 3-0 at home, you should not lose that game. But your pitching just wasn't good enough to hold up.
Last night, as we said, it was Zach Eflin and it was Nick Pivetta stinking up the joint. But it's that whole group of pitchers over the course of the last 5 years, Eflin, Pivetta, Velazquez, Adam Morgan. It's like the wasted generation of Phillies pitchers. Eichhoff, you know, he's been hurt, but he wasn't that good even before he got hurt. Remember Jake Thompson?
Oh, jeez.
Ben Lively. I mean, they had all these prospects, a lot of guys they got in different trades when they traded Hamels. When they took apart the 2011 team, they added a lot of pitchers, and some of them were considered real prospects, or some of them they drafted and brought up through the system. This was going to be the next generation of pitchers, and other than Nola Ray, they just all stink on ice. I had a caller the other day when I hate to reference callers that drive you nuts, but a caller drove me nuts on Wednesday when I was filling in with John Barcher, tell me that Chris Young is all that because he turned Drew Smyly around and he had a good start. Chris Young stinks. I mean, Drew Smyly is not a good pitcher, but nobody turned anybody around.
No.
And nobody gets turned around. Now, this is Chris Young's first year as pitching coach, so I can't blame him for, as I said, an entirely bad generation. But nobody's gotten better this year. Is there any pitcher on this team that you would say you look at him last year versus this year, and boy, he's taken a nice step?
The only one that I would say looked to me like he showed some improvement, and it's sort of not there now. But early in the season, Alex Morgan, who I was prepared to just write off, actually started the year pitching pretty good. And, you know, he sort of reverted to being what he is, which is generally the case here. I mean, you've got – and this – I was thinking about this just the other day. Is what you said is exactly right. I mean, they had this whole crop of pitchers that they brought in, and all of them were highly regarded because they came in trades and were actually in many cases pointed to the key player in the trades. Oh,
right.
This guy.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's a top of the rotation kind of prospect. And, I mean, they can't get you to the fourth inning. And that's what's really killing you. I mean, Aaron Nola, you drafted number one and with the hopes that he could be a guy at the top of your staff. And he's proven to be all of that. But behind him, you have nothing.
All right, so let's talk about Eflin a little bit because he may bother me more than any of the others. And trust me, all of them bother me. Has a 3-run yesterday, and he loses it. And he loses it in a bothersome way in that he's 3 times a strike away from getting out of it and then gives up hits.
One of them to the pitcher. He gets the pitcher down 2 strikes and can't finish him? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Now, he's got this thing where, and I saw the stat today, first time through the order, he limits opposing hitters to a .213 batting average. Nice. After that, second time through the order, opponents are hitting .363 against him.
Mm-hmm.
So either he runs out of gas or they just kind of figure him out, get a better look, whatever. Remember, this is the guy who came out of the start against Pittsburgh after 4 innings with heavy legs.
Yes.
Remember? He had
heavy body.
He had heavy body.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out. He has had other games this year where he just runs out of gas. You're a major league pitcher. Oh, this is what he said. This is what he said yesterday. This will drive you crazy. Mike, he's a give me a word I can use on the air for a word that I can't use on the air. He's a wuss. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say that.
All right, let's go with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. He lasts 3 2/3 innings yesterday, and this is what he said. He's not trying to strike guys out. I think the swings and misses are a plus when you can do that. I'm not saying that's not important, but I think it's definitely more important to get guys out with fewer pitches as opposed to just going for swing and misses because, you know, that takes a toll on your body. You didn't make it out of four innings. You didn't make it out of four innings, and I got to hear about the toll on your body because you're throwing, you're trying to strike guys out?
Mm-hmm. It does drive you crazy.
I mean, what is, you know, I understand endurance in the major leagues is not what it used to be. Guys don't pitch 9, 8, 7 innings in a start. I mean, 6 innings is a blessing,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, I've seen this act with him before after games when he couldn't get it done, and his remarks after the game, they're very much in this vein. I mean, somebody needs to write him a prescription for some get tough pills. You know, it really is. I mean, that's just lacking. And you know, well, two things that I think, having watched this pitching staff all summer, is I do think the pitching coach is a problem.
Oh, I really do think
the pitching coach is a problem
because
some of this is attitude. Some of this is what's between their ears. Some of this is their approach to pitching. And patterns like you see with Eflin, where he can go through the first part of the order and successfully, second time he goes through the order, less successfully, third time, my God, it becomes a catastrophe. And you've seen it with Velasquez, too, where if he goes through the third time, they're hitting .500 against him. Now, part of that is pitch. Is the pitching coach has got to figure out a way that, okay, why does that not translate? Is it a matter of pitch selection and mixing up his pitches, or is it a matter of conditioning? But either way, there shouldn't be that kind of a drop-off from inning 1 and 2 to inning 3 and 4. That's for pitching coaches to figure out, and this guy seems incapable of that. That's part of it. The other part of it is I don't see anybody on this staff other than Nola that I would say has dynamic stuff when you watch them pitch.
Mm-mm.
You know, a lot of times you see young pitchers come up, and they have explosive stuff, but they can't harness it. They can't control it. They don't know how to use it. But you say, we can coach this guy into it. He's got the stuff to be a big winner up here. We just kind of have to get his act together. You know, I don't see that kind of stuff on this staff either. So
No. The
combination of that plus the fact that I don't think they're being particularly well coached or prepared leaves you with this pitching staff, which is just in shambles.
Yeah, and by the way, just to get his name in here, Pavetta came out of the bullpen yesterday and allowed 2 runs in the 5th.
Right.
After which Gabe Kapler said he really admired him, the way he fought and looked and whatever. Bad luck, nonsense, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Okay. It's really troublesome because I have been excited, I think, like most fans, as you know, the offense starts to click, and you can say it's Charlie Manuel, or you can just say it's established hitters finally hitting their stride. Bryce Harper hitting his stride. Real Muto hitting his stride. You can say that, but they can't score 8 runs every night.
Right.
And if they lose 3-1, that's on the hitters. But as you said, if you score 3 runs early at home against the Padres are, you know, not the 27 Yankees.
No.
You score 3 runs early against the Padres, your pitching staff has to hold up in that game, and they did not.
Yeah. I mean, they're not even the 2019 Yankees. And that's the thing. You get a bad team down at home like that, you bury them. You know, 3-0 becomes 5-0, becomes 6-0, and then the game's over. And you didn't. And it's very frustrating for me, and I think probably for everybody out there in the audience, because, listen, in August, we all had such high hopes for this team. And, I mean, maybe you could accuse me or some other people, you maybe even, of maybe did we set the bar too high? Were our expectations too high?
You're talking about before the season?
Hmm?
When are you talking about?
April.
Okay, you said August. Okay, April.
Oh, No. I meant to say April.
When
you know, we came off the thing of the greatest offseason in history,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you look at this lineup, my God, they're going to lead the league in runs scored. And, I mean, that was my expectation. I think it was a lot of people's expectation. So where you're sitting right now, to say that, well, we're still in the race for the second wild card, even if you grant them that, it's disappointing when you compare it to your expectations.
hey, they're in the race. They're a game behind the Cubs. You know, here's hoping it works out, but you need the pitching staff to do something for you. You really, really do. All right, let's grab a call or two here to start the show. Let us go to Yardley and check in with Mike about the Phillies. Hey, Mike, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hey, Glenn. Ray, good to talk to you.
Pleasure.
Hi, Mike.
You know, that Ray, I think you missed the August-April thing, and I don't know if it was heavy legs or what was going on there, but, you know.
Probably that was part of it, yeah. I'll confess to feeling the heavy legs, but that's part of being 70 years old.
Well, yeah, I have a similar kind of problem. But yesterday I couldn't get on. I really wanted to give you guys my word, and it's not going to surprise you, the word that I want to see banished from all sports, and that's analytics.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I called, I don't know if Ray, if you heard, but I called Glenn on Wednesday with Barchard. Mm-hmm. And I took issue with Barchard because I thought he was saying that the switch to Charlie Manuel was mostly cosmetic, a PR ploy to satisfy the fan base. And I don't think it's that at all. I think it really is a watershed moment. I think it signals a kind of regime change. And this ties into the discussion you guys were just having. If you saw the look on Klentak and Kapler's face when they were talking to the press about the bringing Charlie in to be the hitting coach, it looked like they had just come back from the woodshed to me. I couldn't have felt more validated in my opinion about something in sports with Wednesday night's and then Thursday night's performance. You know, if you thought that this analytics-driven hitting philosophy survived on Wednesday and Thursday, you weren't paying attention. The team came out, they were swinging at fastballs, and after the game, I think I read in the paper, Charlie Manuel said something that is just perfect Charlie. They asked him about his hitting philosophy and analytics, and he goes, I don't teach walks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's been poisoning the hitters. But you talk about pitching. There's a similar thing going on with pitching in this guy, Chris Young, I guess his name is.
That's his name.
How is it, you know, reflecting back last Sunday, Bob Bookrover, everybody on this team is underperforming. And it's because of this analytics-driven coaching philosophy. And the one thing that makes me the most anxious is when Charlie is no longer the hitting coach, and that this idea of teaching walks is permeating the young players in our system. Is that what we're going to have? Are we ever going to break out of this?
Well,
I sure hope so.
We will, and thanks for your call. We will have this until either Klentak says, you know, there's probably more than one way to do this, which I don't know if that's going to happen, or until the owner, John Middleton, says, wait a second. This is so predictable. The thing that annoys me about what the hitting philosophy was before Charlie came in is everybody had the same hitting philosophy. Every
right.
hitter would come up with the same intention, which is try to crank a home run. It is the same thing with the pitching staff. It really bothers me that you have a team of pitchers and everybody's doing the same thing. I know what they're going to throw on 2-1, and if I know what they're going to throw on 2-1, I imagine the other team's managers figured it out.
Yeah, I would say a pretty good chance.
And so that really is bothersome. And by the way, we did the thing yesterday on if you could ban any one word from the sports lexicon, what would you do? Can I throw in launch angle?
Yeah.
And heat map.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the heat map is?
Mm-hmm.
Velocity.
I was going to say exit velocity.
Exit philosophy. Expected weighted on base average. Can I throw out that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Establish the run.
Yeah, okay.
Really? I was just trying to.
I'm just.
Trying to jab you
just,
on that one.
I'm just indulging you.
I was
there.
Just seeing if you were paying attention.
I'm just indulging you. I knew what you were doing. I knew what you were going for there.
I just want to sneak that one in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Bob Brookover wrote an interesting piece just in the last day or two where he interviewed Greg Gross, who was the Phillies hitting coach under Charlie back in the day. And Greg Gross was the was the ultimate definition of a contact hitter. Not a lot of power, but always put the ball in play. And he's now, he's been coaching, teaching in baseball ever really since his playing career ended. And Bob Brookover went over to talk to him about, you know, what can Charlie do with this team at this point, coming in at this point? And it got into a whole discussion about old school hitting philosophy versus the analytic philosophy. And Greg Gross, I think, kind of came down where I am on it, which is, look, I'm not going to trash the whole idea of analytics. I think there is some value to it. But you have to measure it against just practical baseball application, which is, I think a lot of this, they try to teach everybody to hit the same way. And, you know, guess what? You know, you didn't try to teach Pete Rose to hit like George Foster. Pete Rose hit like Pete Rose, and George Foster was George Foster, and they're both great players who helped you win world championships, but they didn't approach the plate exactly the same way. Same thing with, you know, Rich Ashburn and Del Ennis. I mean, they went up to the plate with different philosophies because they had different skill sets.
Same thing and with I think Ryan Howard and Shane Victorino.
Yeah.
We can go back 5 years.
To go back to the more recent team, yeah, Victorino and Howard. I mean, each guy has to play to his own strengths at the plate. It's not that complicated. And to try and make everybody approach it the same way at the plate and have one philosophy fits all because this is sort of your mathematical printout of the thing, to me is silly. And I think what Charlie has brought back, and players have kind of alluded to this, is just a much simpler approach. Just, hey, listen, go up there. If you see a good pitch, go hit it. You know, if it's in the zone, go after it. And the one thing, the one difference that I have seen since Charlie's been back is you see guys are more aggressive at the plate. You know, early in the year, they were taking a ton of pitches. And after a game, Gabe would always be talking about, hey, you know, we saw, you know, 150 pitches today. That's really – but, okay, but you took – how many of your guys took a real fat first strike that they could have maybe driven in the gap? If go up there, look for a pitch to hit, and if you can swing it, drive it.
I believe that was part of Charlie's hitting philosophy was see the ball, hit the ball.
That was it.
Yeah, not see the ball. Make sure you see it 7 or 8 times per at bat.
Right.
888-729-9494. He's Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Macnow. We're going to take your calls coming up right here on 94 WIP. Hey, Ray, how's the play going?
Oh, the play's going great, Glenn. Thanks for asking. It's we had a great twin bill yesterday. We had 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Mike Quick came to the 7 o'clock show to do the
yeah, I know that's
Q&A,
good.
And he was great, as Mike always is, and the audience loved him. And it was we had 2 really good shows, 2 full houses, and rolls on. Some critics have reviewed the play this week, and we got really nice reviews. And it's really been great. It has really been wonderful. And we still have more shows to go. We have 2 shows today at 3 and 7. We have another show Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Harold Carmichael will be there doing the Q&A, which I'm really looking forward to. This will be the first time that Harold's come to see
the anti-Tommy McDonald.
Yeah, that is a Mutt and Jeff, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then the very next night on Wednesday, Dick Vermeil is coming for the second time to see the play, and he will be there as the host and doing the Q&A afterwards. So come on out and see it, Tommy and me. We've got 1 more week to run. We close next Sunday, but come out to Fringe
Really,
Arts.
Next Sunday, eh?
Next
Tell me
Sunday.
About that show.
The final show is 7 o'clock next Sunday, and the host, the moderator of the Q&A, is none other than you.
Yes.
So
I'm looking forward to it.
So if you want to come out, you've got 1 more week to come out and see the play. And as I said, Harold Carmichael is going to be Tuesday. Dick Vermeil is going to be Wednesday. If you're interested in coming, please do. Go to theaterexile.org and you can order your tickets and come on out. Really a beautiful theater on Columbus Boulevard.
Speaking of Dick Vermeil, speaking of Ray Dinger, did you mention Seth Joyner? Speaking
Seth,
of him.
And actually, Seth Joyner is coming tonight.
There you go.
Seth
All right.
Joyner's coming tonight.
Happy to help. My annual charity event for the Philadelphia Schools Young Heroes Program is, tickets are now on sale. This year is going to be Dick Vermeil, Seth Joyner, and Ray Dinger in the smartest football talk you ever heard. I'm building it very modestly, Ray. Don't let me down. Don't let me down.
No, those two guys, you know, they'll do the heavy lifting.
It is going to be Wednesday evening, September 25th at the National Liberty Museum on 3rd and Chestnut Street, catering by Zally's Catering, beer by Conshohocken Brewing Company. Dick Vermeil is going to bring some Vermeil wines.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun program, and really would love it. It's a terrific charity, the Young Heroes Program of the school district. You can go online now and get, because we only sell about 100 tickets, so go online now, get tickets at libertymuseum.org. That's libertymuseum.org. Okay, enough about us. Let's get to the callers. Warren in Gwinnett Valley wants to talk about the Phillies pitching.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Glenn and Ray.
You bet, Warren.
I have a problem with Gabe with his explanations after the game, and I wish he would either own up and say it's his fault or something besides coming up with these concocted explanations that that the pitchers tried their best or whatever he wants to say. I think that just drives the fans crazy after a poor loss. Would you not agree?
I would agree with that. I think he's lapsing more into that now than he was earlier in the year. You know, I think McPhail had actually talked to him about being a little more honest in his post-game remarks and, you know, not trying to sugarcoat things and just be a little more honest and direct with the fans. And I think early in the season he kind of was, but as the season has gone on, I see he's beginning to become more and more like the Gabe we saw last year, which, frankly, when this team's going bad, that's not going to fly in this town.
It's not going to fly. And the other thing is, if he could say either he left Zach Eflin in too long or he's going to talk to Zach, you know, about his approach to pitching or something and help him with his attitude, you know, something more positive that way, I think that would help also. And the reason I called was taking up on the line that you were saying was, you know, these excuses from the Zach and after the game that, mm-hmm. you know, that the heavy legs and that sort of thing is – my question to you is, isn't there somebody, you know, helping with not only the physical preparedness, the mental preparedness of pitchers, and don't they want to learn what they're doing wrong and somehow, you know, improve game after game and throughout the season?
Yeah, where's Dr. Fish, right?
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the role of the pitching coach, is establishing a philosophy and working with the pitchers. And And that's, I mean, it's philosophical. It really does start with the pitching coach, and it can work through an entire staff. And, I mean, I've seen all kinds of different pitching coaches come through here. Some were real technicians and very into the technique of pitching, and to the point where they would teach guys new pitches, new grips. I mean, Johnny Padres was a master at that. And the pitchers, I mean, they swore by Johnny Padres. Even the veteran guys, I mean, Johnny could always teach them a different kind of grip or a different kind of pitch. I mean, he was the guy that was big on that circle change, and guys had tremendous success with it. And then there are the other guys that are just, it's all about approach and being aggressive and the philosophy that you take to the mound. But one way or another, you got to get through to these guys and make them better. And I haven't seen, and just the way we started the show talking about, I haven't seen any of these pitchers improve under this pitching coach. Aaron Nola is what he is. I mean, he started the year kind of slow, but he's rounded into form.
Well, let me just stop you. He's not nearly as good as he was last year.
No.
He was a Cy Young candidate last year,
if not
for DeGrom.
He was.
Sure.
But since April, he's been certainly good more than he's been bad. But behind him, you haven't had anybody that you hand them the ball and you feel any confidence in. None.
I forgot what I was going to say. I'm too disgusted. So let's get a caller. Let's go to Bill and Pittman. Bill, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hey, Ray and Glenn. Love the program. How
Thank
you guys
you,
doing
Bill.
Today?
Great.
Hey, listen, you guys talked a little bit about analytics while I was on hold. I read a book about 15 years ago. It was called Killing the Spirit by a professor at Cambridge named Paige Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And his premise is that the misapplication and misuse of the scientific method is killing, like, the arts, the humanities, philosophy. And there's elements of analytics in baseball that are really killing the fundamentals of the sports. And it's really obvious in the Phillies pitching staff. Nola had the advantage of going to LSU and pitching for one of the best pitching coaches in America, Alan Dunn. And Alan Dunn's put a lot of guys in the major leagues. The rest of that staff, I don't think they're good, with the exception of one guy. I think Pivetta's got a really good curveball when he's on, and his fastball moves a lot. He just needs a real pitching coach. He needs a technician like you guys were just talking about. And, you know, I'm afraid of Pivetta is that you know, they're going to trade him away and give up on him. And 2 years from now, we're going to be scratching our heads going, wow, why wasn't he doing that for the Phillies?
I could see that. I could see somebody getting Pivetta, tearing him down, building him up again from scratch, and him realizing the talent he has.
Yeah. Well, because at the start of the year, when we were projecting this Phillies team coming out of spring training, I mean, one of the things I said, and I said it to you on the show probably half a dozen times, oh, I really think Pivetta is going to have a big year. You know, I think if you're looking,
you weren't alone.
I think if you're talking about a guy who's going to be a breakout player on this Phillies team this year, I think it's going to be Pivetta for the reasons you just said. I think he does have good stuff, but he certainly doesn't bring it to the mound all the time. And you know, you don't want to give up on a guy like that. But I could see what the scenario you're talking about, that they finally get discouraged enough to just say, "Oh, it's never going to happen for this guy." They trade him somewhere else where he gets into another organization with another pitching staff. All of a sudden, he finds it, and you wind up that this guy's in the All-Star game.
Yeah, and seriously, like Nola, when he's on, his curveball goes 12 to 6. And I was a good curveball hitter in high school. You can't hit that. That's hard. That's like impossible to hit. Pivetta's curveball when he's on isn't 12 to 6, but it's about like 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock. And that's still a major league curveball.
Oh,
he just doesn't
stuff.
Have the command on it that he needs. Yeah,
he's got the stuff. It's command, and he clearly doesn't have the confidence in himself. He and Eflin both have the same thing, where you watch the game and you see them self-destructing on the mound when things go badly.
Right.
You just see them falling apart like little leaguers. And although I've been watching the Little League World Series, those kids keep it together.
I know.
And it's your own personal makeup. You're more responsible for yourself than anybody else is for you. I'm a big believer in personal responsibility. However, you really want a pitching coach and organizational coaches, scouts, doctors, psychologists, whatever, to be able to help you through that. And these guys are not doing it. Hey, I told you that at 10:45 I was going to say something that was going to drive you nuts and make you slap your head.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to that.
Yeah, we might have to push it back because our friend Tom McCarthy is going to, Phillies broadcaster, come down and join us. And I'm going to push that back a little bit if we get Tommy to explain what he sees is going on here.
I see, okay.
But don't let me forget it during the show.
Oh, no.
Because it's going to make you angry, Ray.
And now it's angry. First of all, you said I was just going to be perplexed.
Befuddled and upset.
I rarely
disappointed
get
in society as we know it.
Well, that's every day.
There you go. 888-729-9494. He's Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Macnow. We are at NovaCare Broadcast Booth, Citizens Bank Park. Ray Dinger, Glenn Macnow with the NovaCare Broadcast Booth, Citizens Bank Park. Phillies against the Padres. Game coming up at 1:05 today. Jason Vargas for the Phillies. Joey Lucchese, the second-year young left-hander for the Padres. Two left-handers in this game. And if you watch this on television today, you will hear the dulcet tones of one Tom McCarthy, nice enough to join us on this day. Nice to see you, my friend.
You too, guys.
Let's start with the good news, all right? The good news is that a couple of guys who the team has been counting on to really provide the offense have been very hot. JT Realmuto, it's another home run yesterday. And Bryce Harper has been very, very hot in August. Not really a surprise. I think we've been waiting for Harper to hit that stride where he can carry the team, and it certainly seems like he's in it.
Yeah, I think he's in a flow that I think started in San Francisco. It's funny. John and I were talking about this the other night. He's the modern day Cal Ripken, where he tinkers with his stance all the time. And you know, I think it's good because I think that there's an adjustment that probably has to be made even from game to game, at bat to at bat, and he's able to do that. But he's got this little toe tap going now.
Yeah.
And I've had this debate with some fans who have said that he's done it all year. He has not done it all year. I went back and looked at his first 14 home runs, and they were all leg kick. So I decided to stop after that because then I looked at his last two home runs in San Francisco, and they were both leg kicks. And you know, honestly, I didn't think he needed to even switch it, but he does. I mean, it's all comfort level. And he's really looked good. JT has kind of twisted his approach a little bit, kind of back to the way it used to be, and we always anticipated, is right center field. And then, you know, if he pulls the ball like last night's home run,
yeah,
he pulls the ball.
Yeah.
It's been good to watch. I think it's the first time in a while we've had more than one guy hot at the same time.
How would you, we all know that Harper's been on a tear here in the last little bit, but how would you assess his season as a whole, Tom, compared to your expectations?
Yeah, I think that he's probably underachieved batting average-wise, but I think all of his other numbers are on par to what maybe a little lighter, but close to being what I think everybody anticipated. It's probably not $30 million worth, but then again, in baseball, there's probably not guys that are worth $30 million a year, or in any sport that are worth $30 million a year. So I kind of put the money aside. But I think everything that he's done from his defense in the outfield, which is way better, Ray, than anybody anticipated it would be.
Yeah, I agree with that.
To his aggressiveness, sometimes overly aggressive on the base paths. I think he's been thrown out 8 times on the base paths, but he's also helped produce some runs on the base paths. I think it's been, you know, I think it's been better or as good as I thought it would be. I will tell you one thing, and this is shame on me, to be honest with you, is he's a way better guy than I ever gave him credit for. And that's wrong on my part because I only looked at it from the outside looking in.
I think we all did.
I think everybody did, yeah. And I had talked to him a few times. He was always cordial and great and gave information when you asked him something. But, you know, until he's on your team, he's public enemy number one.
Yeah, he gets booed everywhere. I watch the games on TV. Well, like they're booing him in San Francisco.
Right.
Why are you booing him in San Francisco?
Somebody said, well, we wanted him. And I'm like, well, everybody wanted him.
Right, well, we boo Machado.
Exactly.
Right? It's the exact same thing.
Exactly.
And we're happy we got Harper. We boo Machado. So Charlie Manuel came in last week as the new hitting coach. They celebrated by scoring, I think, 25 runs in the next 3 games. Clearly, Charlie did not sit down with every one of the hitters and change their approach, but there were immediate benefits. What do you attribute it to, Tom?
You know, I think part of it, I was talking to somebody yesterday about this, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I think part of it is self-assessment by the players. And I'm not saying that they can change everything on a dime, but I think that they sense that, you know, there was probably a change coming. There could have been more than this change coming, because of the way the team was performing. And I think that some of them, JT Realmuto was one of them, and I thought his comments were awesome after John Mailey was let go about the responsibility that's on the players. I think some of them self-assessed a little bit and said that we have to kind of fix what's going on personally. The other part of it, too, is I was with Charlie early this morning in the garage, and he looked at me in his normal way, and he said, "What do you think, Tom?" Like, you know, there's this calming force that surrounds him. It's the weirdest thing. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, people always say it's like your grandfather or your dad or whatever. Whatever it is.
Uncle Charlie.
Yeah, whatever it is that you feel like everything's okay if it's in his hands. And ironic, right? I mean, most fans after the first year wanted him out of town. But I think Gabe said to me the other day, I said, what's the difference? What do you feel the difference is? He said, I don't know. He said, it's kind of interesting. The other day, he said, we're struggling along, and I looked over, and Charlie just turned to me and winked and smiled, and I was like, all right, we're okay. I think it was the night that they came back and won.
Right, right. No, I think there's a lot of that, and I think that, and you're obviously far closer to this than I am. I'm really looking at it from the outside. But they seem to be a team like, for a large stretch of the season, and particularly right before this streak, they seem to be a team that we all thought was going to be really good and be a lot of fun. And they were neither good nor fun. I mean, it just seemed to be a team that was, I mean, that West Coast trip, I mean, that looked like a death march. I mean, they were just trudging. And I think, and I just think that Charlie came in here and his personality, I mean, he just relaxes everybody, and it just sort of changed the temperature in the room. I mean, it's hard for people to understand on the outside. It seems like come on, what are you talking about? But if you know Charlie, you know his personality, and you know the dynamics of a baseball clubhouse, and you kind of see where this team was, just Charlie coming in there and putting on the uniform every day makes everybody feel better about things.
Yeah, I do think that, Ray. I agree with you about the fun part. I mean, the first 3 weeks of the season, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they played well. I mean, they were in first place. The place was rocking. But it was almost, I don't want to say it became too businesslike, but it became, too sort of streamlined. Mm-hmm. It wasn't outside the lines, mm-hmm. so to speak, you know, sort of taking chances, using instinct, that type of thing. Yeah, it's been good. I mean, I said to one of my buddies yesterday, I said, you know, I'm just going to try to enjoy it. The last 5.5 weeks of the season, hopefully they play well enough to get into the postseason. We'll just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Phillies broadcaster Tom McCarthy. The flip side of that is what's going on with Rhys Hoskins. Our producer Bill Matz gave me some interesting numbers. I mean, you see it every day, Tom. But in the last 17 games, 16 starts, He's hitting 105 with 278 on base, 193 slugging percentage, one home run over those last 17 games. He's Rhys Hoskins. And I know he's got a bit of a history of hot and cold. A lot of sluggers do. But there's cold, and then there's, like, you know, 100 miles below the North Pole cold. What do you see?
Yeah, I think that he's probably project number one for Charlie, and they've already started working. You know, for me, it's hard to sit and say it's this mechanic, it's that mechanic. I mean, some of it is the back leg. Some of it's just pitch selection, dropping the shoulder, all these kind of things. I think that what you said, Glenn, is right on. He is a streaky hitter. We've kind of learned that the last few years. This is beyond that. I mean, even since the All-Star break, he's hitting under 200, which is very un-Reese-like. I think there's probably pressure. I think there's a lot of that. I think it's led to some habits that are not conducive to success, I mean, from an offensive standpoint. I do think that he'll be Charlie's. I think he already is. He's project number one.
Yeah.
I don't think they want him to bat leadoff. I think they want him to...
Doing it today.
They're doing it today. Don't think they want this to happen consistently, but I think they feel like, let's try something to get him going. I don't want to say it's concerning, because I do think the kid has a world of talent. I love him as a person. He's one of the best kids in the world, obviously. But I just think that he's in a baseball funk that hopefully he'll get out of and will ride the month of September.
Does it seem to you that he's too hard on himself?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think it's pressure. I think he's, you know, Bryce came in, and Bryce is the guy. He's the foundation piece. But the main foundation piece before that was Rhys.
Sure.
And I think it's, you know, I think there's pressure on him. I think it's self-inflicted, but, I mean, we would all probably be in the same boat. I think he's put a lot of pressure on himself to be successful.
Yeah, I really thought that was going to be one of the many fringe benefits of the signing of Harper.
Totally
agree. Is that Hoskins, I really like him. I like him as a talent. I like him. I like his approach. I like the fact that he's, I mean, he wants to win, and he's a team guy, and he has natural leadership abilities. But the one thing about him is, God, he seems so hard on himself. He seems so critical of himself. And I kind of thought that leads to a guy putting pressure on himself. And I kind of thought one of the real benefits of bringing Harper in here is that Harper will take a little bit of that away from him and let Hoskins kind of just settle in and let his talent take over. Yes. And I think ultimately that will happen over time. But I think one of Hoskins's issues that, and I don't know how you get a guy past this, and you love to see a guy who wants to really achieve, but I think sometimes when things go bad, he sometimes complicates it by being doubly hard on himself.
Yeah, I do think he's hard on himself. I think he's a perfectionist. But I agree with you, Ray, what you were saying about the combination that I thought Harper would take pressure off him. I think that the good thing is that, you know, maybe we do see that for September. I don't – the one thing about Rhys is that he'll work his way out of it. But it's been an extended period of time. It's been well over a month since the All-Star break. Not well over a month, but it's been a month since the All-Star break. So that's where the struggles began. And hopefully, as if things are relaxed, I think today is a big day, because I think you have to win this series against a really poor team. I mean, poor base running, poor defensively.
Oh, absolutely.
You've got to put this game away. And hopefully that, you know, eases everybody into this road trip.
It's Phillies broadcaster Tom McCarthy. You can follow Tom. Where are you on Twitter?
T-Mac Phils. I try my best.
Tom, you respond to the people on Twitter.
I do. I try to. Some of it's beyond comical, as you guys know, that I don't respond to, that I'd like to respond to,
respond to. Can I tell you my rule about responding to trolls on Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you respond to the trolls a lot more than I do. I will respond to somebody who comes at me if it is a picture I believe to actually be of them and their real name.
I totally agree with
you. If their name is, you know, Phil's Hater 52 and it's a picture of Gritty, it's like, hey, if you can't really be who you are, I don't need to talk to you.
I pick and choose my spots because I know that there's I know that if well, let's just say I pick and choose my spots.
Don't let that stuff get to you.
Oh, it doesn't. It's actually quite comical, to be honest with you.
Tommy, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. Always nice
you
to see you.
Too.
You'll be on
what
your.
What do you think about the McGowan signing?
Ray, you go.
I like it.
Yeah, I like him as a person. I mean, I don't know if that means anything, but I like him.
Does for that job.
I like him as
He is a good dude. He really
he's a good
is.
Good dude. He's good with the,
you're the senior younger guy, in the guy room.
Senior guy in the room. Right. Good in the room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, you know,
I've done a lot of Browns games.
Oh yeah. You are on that.
I am the 7 crew on CBS. I'm not moving from that because of baseball, thankfully. But
right.
I've done a lot of Browns games, and every time I go there or I went there. Man, they love them. Even the Jets, when I did a couple Jets games, they love them.
Yeah, I think he is universally respected among teammates in the game. And I think when you are the third-string quarterback coming in who may or may not play, but you're a guy who Carson Wentz can – you can go to Carson Wentz and say, hey, I've seen everything. Let me tell you about it. I think that's a good thing.
No, absolutely. And we talked a little about this yesterday, is that – I mean, he did so much good for Sam Darnold last year.
I agree with that.
I mean, Darnold, by the end of the season, when he was playing better, people were saying, boy, you're really – he said, listen, having had a whole year working with Josh has been so beneficial for me. Now Carson Wentz is a lot further along than Sam Darnold, but I still think there are things that he can learn about playing in the NFL that Josh McCown has lived at all.
Yep. Takes care of himself really well, too.
Yeah, good. Yeah, what is 40 years old.
Yep.
Somebody said, why would he leave ESPN to do this? Because they guaranteed him $2 million.
Well, it's also, as you guys know, it is a narcotic that is tough to get out of your system. Being
sure.
There. It is.
Yeah, I know. When you're done, you're done.
When you're done, you're done. But
right.
If you're not done,
right.
It's still seeping through your veins.
Who wouldn't want to play forever? I get that. Tommy McCarthy, it is always a pleasure. Nice to see you. You're on today with Crook and is
Schmitty.
It a Schmitty game?
Yep.
There you go.
Yep.
Starting a little bit after 1 o'clock. We'll come back. We'll talk to Mark in Woodbury Heights and Sam. Anybody else who checks in, and I do promise next segment I am going to drive Ray Dinger crazy with something that somebody in baseball suggested yesterday. I'm going to give you a clue. It's a major league manager.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't a good idea.
Don't give it away. Whom I believe you probably really respect.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're going to hate it. It's going to be fun. 888-729-9494. Ray and Glenn from Citizens Bank Park, NovaCare Broadcast Booth on 94 WIP. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now. NovaCare Broadcast Booth, Phillies game, 105. I almost said 105 kickoff. First pitch at 105 today, Phillies against the Padres. Let's talk to Mark in Woodbury Heights. You're on with Ray and Glenn.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey.
Last night's game, I'm not trying to be Mr. Negative here. I felt this way after the 4 wins, excited about the win over the Cubs, the comeback win and all that. But I've been watching this team all year. I've seen this before, the 4-game sweep of the Mets, momentum after the Dodgers series. Here's the bottom line and why this team won't get hot consistently. Like I'm saying, win 9 out of 10, you know, 8 out of 11, whatever. The manager of this team, along with the pitching coach, the hitting coach that was dismissed. It's this, everything's okay, we're going to be all right, we're going to live for another day. And that just gets into the mindset of guys like Pivetta, Eflin. There's got to be a point where you've got to step up, okay? You've got to answer the call. You know, the manager needs to understand that you've scored 6 or 7, 8, 10 runs over the last 3 games, right? 3-4 games. Mm-hmm. Last night, you have to anticipate we may not get to that point. So we need to scratch out a few runs. John Kruk, without ripping them last night, kept making the point they had a guy on second with nobody out. We got to get him to third. They didn't do it.
Right. They didn't hit behind. They never do that fundamental hit behind the runner.
That's just not part of their that's not part of their playbook. I agree with you. It drives me crazy, but that's not the way they play the game.
And it's ridiculous because you could have picked up another run or two, which would have made a huge difference last night. You know, you had to win that game last night. You know, and it's just this, you know, we got time. We're okay. You know, Nick's hanging in there. He's battling. Enough's enough. And it's due to the manager. And, guys, I got news for you. And, Ray, I agree with you 100%. This team's not going to make the playoffs. Did you see their schedule in September?
Oh, yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah, a lot of road
games. And a lot of road games,
but
exactly.
a lot of division games. So if you're going to make up ground, that's your opportunity to do it.
But with this climate that this manager has created, okay, and you know, how poorly they play on the road. I don't mean to be negative, but I do not see it. And you're right. No one is getting better. No one.
No one is getting better, and that really is the big concern with this franchise. Yep. Sam in Honeybrook. Oh, Ray, I bought my basement bubble windows over in Honeybrook.
Well, there you go.
That's what I know. They got a place there, Sam, that sells great basement bubble windows if you need them.
Hey.
He's not impressed with that.
The burden of the wins falls on the players, not so much on the coaches and the manager. They're the guys that should be standing in front of the mirror after every game and asking themselves, did I do my best? Did I play like Pete Rose would play? There's no magic wand for this team. Once players get to the major leagues, they're probably not going to change that much. I just don't see them changes.
Well, then why have coaches?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, why have coaches? If you're going to take that approach that if guys get to the major leagues and that's what they're going to be, then why have a coach? Your coaches are here to help guys learn. Even when guys, I think that's one of the great failings, and I see it in football all the time. They have this attitude that, well, the guy's in the NFL now. He's got it down. No. The teams that are really good, and the teams are the teams that have really good coaching staffs, where every day they're coaching their players up and they're making them better. You know, you can't just assume that a guy's here and he knows everything, because you, every day you go out there, every day, whether it's in football at practice or in baseball where you're playing a game, every day your goal should be to try and get better. And the coaches are there to help you get better.
Okay. Do you think that the Phillies are getting better?
No. That's why we're talking about the coaching staff.
Yeah, but they still got a The coaches can only tell them what to do or coach them what to do.
We're not exonerating the players from this. We're not. I mean, I did a 5-minute rant on Zach Eflin's heavy body and woe is me Huckleberry Hound approach earlier. So we're not exonerating the players, but we are looking at the approach that the coaching staff is taking, both in terms of hitting and pitching. Okay, not even the mental approach, but the approach they take toward those aspects of the game, and think it's really not helping. It's harmful to where they want to go.
Okay, that being said, I think that the Phillies, if the management really wants to win, is to go out and get pitching. You win with pitching.
Okay, well sure.
Certainly no argument with that. I just think there's a middle ground here, and baseball is a different animal. It really is, because it's 162 games, and you have to accept the fact that there's going to be an ebb and a flow to every season. If you're a good team, you're a bad team. Things are going to you're going to be good, you're going to be bad. But you have to measure it out over the course of a season. So that's why, and there are a lot of things I really liked about Larry Boa, but he was not a particularly good manager, because he played every game of the 162 games. He played it like it was an NFL season. And you just drive guys crazy. You just wear them out. But I think that Gabe and this coaching staff sometimes go to the other extreme, where everything is kind of like, oh, everything's okay. You know, we're doing fine. Don't worry about it. We'll play through this. And, hey, we're giving good effort, and that's good enough. Well, no, it's not really. So somewhere between the two is really where you want to be. And there has to be, ultimately, but there has to be, regardless of who's in the big chair, there has to be some measure of accountability. And I just think they create a culture here where it's too easy to alibi your way out of a loss like last night.
I thoroughly agree with you. All right, Ray. Been holding on to this for a little bit.
Oh, I kept hoping you'd forget this.
No. This is important. Are you ready to go crazy?
Why do you want to ruin my day?
Because I enjoy giving you...
Yeah, exactly right. You enjoy making me miserable.
No, not at all. You know that. That's not the case. Meanwhile, my computer's frozen as I want to get to this.
So sad.
No, we'll get it. Hold on. It's coming back right now. Here we go. All right, Ray. So the other day, the Yankees got pounded by Cleveland. They lost 19-4. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And 19-5, excuse me. And Aaron Boone, the manager of the Yankees, was not happy with the entire thing. Uh-huh. He ended up sending out his first baseman, Mike Ford, to pitch the final two innings of the game. We've seen that here with Roman Quinn.
Seen it here a lot, yeah.
Yeah, right. You see it too much, okay? Aaron Boone, by the way, I remember when Bob Boone was the catcher and his kids would hang around. You probably met Aaron Boone as a little kid.
I sure did.
There you go.
Him and Brett both.
Okay. Had a long, successful major league career. He now manages the New York Yankees. He did not like this, and he said, it's not fun to have to put a position player in that kind of situation. Sitting in my chair, you worry about somebody getting hurt. Throwing up a flag like that and sitting there getting kicked in the mouth, this is no fun.
Okay.
And then he made a suggestion.
Uh-huh.
He said, rather than have to put a non-pitcher on the mound to try to, you know, save one of my arms and risk injury to somebody, he said, you know what I think? I think we should consider what the Little League does.
Oh, no,
and I think
the mercy rule?
I think there would be a lot of benefits to the mercy rule. I think you'd probably eliminate a lot of unwritten rules, you know, people running and swinging 3-0 pitches in the wrong scores. You know how this happens in baseball. Somebody will steal a base up 9 runs.
And, right. And then somebody gets thrown
berserk.
At.
Right, yeah.
The dugout's empty.
This is Aaron Boone saying, if you get to this point after 7 innings or whatever, there might be something to that mercy rule, some merit to that, and worth exploring.
Uh-huh. That's funny.
Wait, what happened to the slapping of the head?
No, that's. I find it really funny. Well, it's. I mean, it's silly. I don't. Was he serious?
I don't think he was. He was not smiling as he said it.
Oh, okay. Because I find it funny that this suggestion comes from the Boone family, who are the first three generation baseball the first three generation Major League Baseball family ever.
Yeah.
Because we all know his father was Bob Boone, and his grandfather was Ray Boone,
right,
who was an all-star player with the Indians and the Tigers.
Right,
so baseball's been in this family since the 40s. So that Aaron, having grown up around this game, would come up with an idea like that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that he really believes that.
I think he believes it.
I can't imagine he really believes it.
He has to know the consequences.
It's a function of getting beat 19-5 is what it is.
Well, sure it is, but he has to know when he says it how it's going to be perceived, and I will tell you that Ed Rendell is right. What did Ed Rendell say? We're becoming
A
nation
of wusses.
Yes.
Yes.
Your pal is correct here.
Well, in some respect, by the way, his book is called Nation of Wusses.
Yeah, it's a great title.
And it's a really good book because his point, he deals a lot in sports because we all know the governor loves sports. But he also takes that whole philosophy to government and how the government of the United States and a lot of our leaders have wussed us into the position we're in today. So there's a lot of merit to what he says. More merit to that than what Aaron Boone says. I don't buy that for a second. It can't. I mean, you can't. What's next? You know, okay, at what point do you stop it?
Well, I don't
Seven
know.
Innings? 5 innings?
Little League game is called when a team has a 10-run lead through 4 or a 15-run lead through 3. They play 6 innings in Little League. So if you were to do something proportionate, I don't know, a 15-run lead? I mean, clearly this is never going to happen.
No,
and it's
not
going to get any ground. But it amazes me that the manager of – and by the way, that you're the New York Yankees means something, right? You're not the manager of the Tampa Bay Rays. You're the manager of the New York Yankees.
Right.
So when you say this, you carry certain credence and swagger with you.
Yeah. Swagger. That's the word I want to ban.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And there you are bringing it out.
Gravitas.
Maybe I'll smack you in the head.
Can I go with gravitas?
Yeah, I'll go, yes, okay. Better.
You're the manager of the Yankees. You're saying this.
Mm-hmm.
It really struck me as ridiculous.
How do you think of the Yankee? Other Yankee manager? You think Billy Martin? How do you think Billy Martin would have felt about the mercy rule? How do you think Ralph Houk would have felt about the mercy rule? I don't think so. I mean, that's just a function of having 19 runs dropped on you and he's just frustrated. But You can't do it. I mean, especially with the Yankees. My God, they sell TV and radio advertising time for gazillion dollars, and people have bought advertising time for innings 8 and 9. And now all of a sudden you don't play those innings. What, are you going to have a give back? No, that's silly. And you baseball, it's a 9-inning game. You play 9 innings. You're professionals. You go out and you play 9 innings. If you have to finish up with the third baseman pitching, so be it.
There you go.
I'm really shocked that it came from the Boone family, though. I'd like to know what his father had to say about it.
I don't know. Gave him a call and said, what the hell are you talking about?
I'm sure he did.
I don't know. Let's talk to Jeff in Erie. Jeff, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good, Jeff.
I don't know if you can hear me.
We got you.
I'm breaking up a little.
No, we got you.
First of all, I've been trying to get into you guys for a while, and I'm going to tell you guys you're the greatest radio show on the radio. I'm a diehard Eagles fan. My dad would have killed me if I wasn't years ago. And
thank you.
I just love listening to you guys.
Thank you very much.
And what I called about was I agree with Ed Randall about everybody's wusses nowadays. My daughter worked for the Orioles years ago, and so I looked into some of their history and stuff. And back in 69 or 70, I don't remember what year, Earl Weaver had 12 pitchers on his staff for the whole year. And he would go out there and tell those guys, like Palmer, would be out on the mound pitching a good game, start to struggle a little. And he'd warm up a pitcher that really stunk in the bullpen, and Palmer would see that, and he'd get pissed off. And Weaver knew that, so he'd go out to the mound and say, hey, we're going to bring this guy in if you don't get these guys out. And Palmer would finish the game, you know. and these guys, I mean, Dave.
I don't think that's going to work with Zach Eflin. I really believe that Zach Eflin is out there waiting for the manager to come and get him.
There are times that he looks like that.
Yeah, and same thing with Velasquez. Like I think Velasquez is like, hey, I got through four innings, you know, okay, we're done here.
Yeah, right. I mean, what's wrong with, I mean, his theory was the more you throw, the stronger your arm's going to get. I mean, he had a 12-man, you know, 12 guys. I think one guy got hurt the whole season.
Right.
But they
We're not going back to that. I just want to stop you for a second because we're not going back to 1979 and we're not going back to everybody pitching every fourth day and pitchers going eight or nine innings. And it's like that era is long gone. I can't pine for what was 40 years ago. But I can look at a team. I mean, I can pine for what was 5 years ago, right?
Sure, absolutely.
I can pine for the days of Hamels and Halliday and guys who would – pitchers would take the ball and pitch at least – give you six, seven innings until they were tired. I don't want these guys who the first moment they're in trouble, they're looking to bail out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Or in Eflin's case, the first moment of trouble, you just see him mentally collapse.
I know. The whole thing, and you can see it coming. I mean, you can see it coming. All it takes is a bad play behind him, a blooper that drops in. The feeling that he threw a pitch he thought was a strike that he didn't get.
Oh, yeah, that. The shrug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shrug. And then where you see he's really starting to lose it is when the catcher throws the ball back and he snaps it with his glove. And then he starts walking around. And it's like, okay, he's done. You know, you might as well get him out now because it ain't going to get any better. And this is all between his ears. He's doing this to himself. And you sit and you watch the game and you're – and it's so frustrating because he has ability. I mean, we saw it earlier this year. He has the ability to pitch and compete in this league. He can do it at this level. But in many ways, he's his own worst enemy. Now, part of it may just be a growing up thing. Part of it may be a maturity thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is part of why you have coaches here that can get guys through this. I've seen, you know, over the years being around the Phillies, I'm not around this team as much as I was around the previous teams, but I've seen them do that. I mean, Dick Ruthven was a guy that – had a lot of ability, but mentally he just would frustrate himself, and he almost talked himself out of being a really good pitcher. But ultimately, he kind of grew up, and he had pitching coaches like Sturette and some of these guys that knew what his buttons were and how to push him, and it made him into a really good pitcher. You know, he developed. You know, He just developed his skills, but it started as much with his mental approach to the game. And that's one of the things I see lacking. I think Eflin can be a major league pitcher. I think he can be a successful major league pitcher and win, but not where he is right now mentally. He's defeating himself every game. He has to learn to be able to pitch out of trouble.
I remember Hamels the year after the World Series. Had a real down year, looked like his focus wasn't there, you know, did success get to his head? He spent too much time in the off season on the banquet circuit, and had a really down year. And there's a question like, well, how's he going to rebound? Well, guess what? I think with the help of the coaches, and because Hamels is a dedicated, bright guy, he righted it. Ray, it's 10 years later, and he's still pitching.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. 888-729-9494. Ray, coming up, we'll take some calls, but I also want to throw in some football, some interesting things about the Eagles' new quarterback. You'd shake on a couple things off of last Thursday. We're at the NovaCare broadcast booth. Citizens Bank Park, Phil's Padres coming up 105 today. Drew Smyly versus Lucchese. I always want to call him Frank Lucchese, but that's not his name. It's Joey Lucchese.
Yes.
Yes. 94 WIP. Hey, Ray, what are you doing on Tuesday?
I'll probably be a Tommy and me.
Nah, blow that off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you have in mind?
So, Tuesday night at all five Conshohocken Brewing locations, you can grab a great drink, a beer, and or a lemonade, and a portion of what you spend goes to the Alex's Lemonade Fund to help fight pediatric cancer.
Oh, it's a great cause.
All of our places that night are dedicated to raising money for it. And again, all you have to do is come and eat and drink something, because that's the money that's going to go to it. I'm going to be at the Conchie Bridgeport up through probably dinner time. Then I'm going to head over to the Town Tap in Havertown to share in all the fun. And there are also great prizes, including a chance to hang around with Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now, when we do our show at Delaware Park.
I like that.
So everybody should come out on Tuesday night to any of our spots. Conshohocken, Bridgeport, Havertown, Phoenixville, King of Prussia. Grab a beer, grab a lemonade, grab a shandy. You know what a shandy is, Ray?
No.
Shandy is a combo beer lemonade.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh. Sell a lot of those?
We don't normally, but with this, we're going to.
Oh, okay.
So
that's a very nice thing that you do with this charity, where a portion of the proceeds, you know, a portion of the take that night goes to the charity. That's a great deal.
Well, yeah. We like to be part of the community, you know. It's a good thing. Listen, we are in business because people in the community come and support us, so we want to be part of that. And I'm very proud to be involved with that brewery. They're good people who run the thing.
Well, they are good people. The Town Tap is favorite hangout of my daughter, son-in-law, and the two grandchildren. They're there all the time.
Appreciate that immensely. Mm-hmm. So, Ray, let me ask you. You a big believer in insurance? Car insurance, health insurance.
Well, yeah, to the extent that I recognize you got to have it.
Catastrophic, home, all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because the Eagles are believers in insurance. That's what we've learned. Yes, because what you do is you go when Cody Kessler gets hurt, by the way, kind of stinks up the joint, gets hurt. Well, it's too early to say stinks up the joint.
And by the way, it's his fault.
Yeah, that's really more what I meant to say. Right, it's his fault because
He's got to see that they're rushing 6 against 5, and that, you know, he's got to get rid of the ball quick.
Right.
I mean, you can see that if that had been Thorson, I would have said, you know, he's a rookie, he doesn't see that before. But Cody Kessler, I mean, it's not that he hasn't played 100 years, but he's played in the NFL long enough that he's got to see exactly what that blitz is. He's got to see that they're going to a scat protection, and he's got to get rid of the ball. That's on him.
Yeah, and this comes a week after Nate Sudfeld gets hurt,
mm-hmm.
and you really don't want to go into the season with, you know, Thorson as your backup, so you got to go out and get insurance, and they spent $2 million on a policy known as Josh McCown, who
right.
had retired after a lengthy career in the NFL as the ultimate vagabond,
mm-hmm.
Having played for a lot of teams. So he comes in yesterday. Dave Spadaro, Eagles insider, our friend, does the pregame show, talks to him. This is Josh McCown talking about why he decided to come back.
And I think just the whole organization in general, just where they've been the last few years under Howie and Doug's leadership and you know, winning a championship and just the standard of excellence that they pursue, you know, and to come be a part of that and have this opportunity, obviously this late in my career, after my career, is exciting and to keep it going. So I'm looking forward to working with these guys.
And they also guaranteed me $2 million if I would leave the broadcast booth for a short time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, guess what?
I buried the lead.
He did. But he knows ESPN will always be there. NFL Network will always be there. Those opportunities will always be there. So next year he can go and do that, and I think he'll probably be very good at it. But this was an opportunity to extend his career by one more year, pocket $2 million, put another year into the pension plan, and be part of a team that actually has a chance to win something.
Right.
You know, and you look at his career.
Super Bowl ring.
He hasn't. I mean, he's played for everybody, and he's played a million years, but he's never really been on a team that had a chance to win anything.
Right.
I mean, how can he walk away from this?
I get it. Listen, I understand it. It's one of those things, and we talked about this earlier when Phillies broadcaster Tom McCarthy was here. We always, from the outside, you always say, like, well, why, you know, he's not that good anymore. He should just retire. Right?
Yeah.
Steve Carlton was the ultimate guy. And actually, I'll let you tell your story about that.
The McCarver story, yeah.
Yeah, I'll let you tell that story. But that's the ultimate guy. It's like, listen, he's not very good anymore. Don't embarrass yourself. Get out. But if you are somebody who spends your whole life dedicated to a sport, playing a sport, trying to do it, when you're done, you're done. You want to hold on as long as you possibly can. I get it much more than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
The McCarver story is appropriate here.
Yeah, this was when Steve Carlton was winding down with the Phillies, when it got pretty ugly there towards the end, when he just couldn't really pitch anymore. He couldn't throw strikes. He couldn't get people out. And he was coming out, and they were still running him out there every fourth, fifth day, but he was getting batted around. And you're watching a great career come to a pretty sad end. And Tim McCarver was out of playing now. He was off broadcasting. And so I wanted to write this piece about my view that Steve Carlton should retire. It would be best for everybody if he just went out gracefully now, as opposed to prolonging this thing. Because the Phillies had released him, and then he went off and signed with, I don't know, it was the White Sox or the Twins were the first team he signed with. And you knew it wasn't going to get any better. And I went to McCarver, and who I had always had a really good relationship with. And I began this line of questioning with, don't you think it would be better if he just walked away gracefully? And McCarver said to me, who are you? Who are you to tell Steve Carlton when it's time for him to end his career? And he meant it, boy. I mean, he gave me a look that, I mean, he cut right through me. And he said, you know, basically what he was saying was, that's why you guys in the press don't really understand what it means to be a professional athlete. You don't understand what's involved with being a professional athlete. And he said, the reason that Steve Carlton is pitching right now, and he wants to keep pitching right now, is the same qualities that made him a great pitcher in the first place. He's a great competitor. And his career, he's earned the right to go out on his own terms. If he wants to pitch another year, another 2 years, and somebody's willing to give him a contract, he's earned that right. Who are you or any – and I said, well, the fans – he said, who are you or the fans to say that you're going to the ones that are going to tell Steve Carlton when to hang it up? That's his choice to make.
I get it.
And I – you know what?
I get it more than I used to.
You know what? I totally get it. And – It wasn't the direction I was expecting the conversation to take, because I kind of thought, given the relationship between Carlton and McCarver, I thought he would kind of be on my side.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he presented it to me, I walked away thinking, you know, he's right.
Yeah, I get
he's
it.
Absolutely right.
I absolutely understand it. Hey, our friend Ruben Frank, who's so good at this, did some Josh McCown interesting stats.
Uh-huh.
So he did, he did a lot. I'll give you a few. If and when Josh McCown throws a pass, he will be the oldest player in Eagles history ever to throw a pass in a regular season game.
The oldest currently being?
Not a quarterback. Sam Baker.
Oh, my God.
Who threw a pass in the 1968 season, a 58-yard touchdown to safety John Mallory. I'm assuming it was a trick play. You remember that one in 68?
Well, it was out,
that was a bad year.
It's out of punt formation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, probably. So, yeah, 68 was the Joe Must Go
year.
Yeah,
your mom was in full glory that year.
She was wearing her Joe Must Go button, I'm sure.
Josh McCown is now the only active player from the 2002 NFL draft.
Wow.
I always find that interesting. When they have that draft, like, who's going to be the last to survive?
It's usually a kicker.
Yeah, or sometimes, you know, Brady, obviously. Yeah. Julius Peppers played last year, and it was the only other guy from that draft, so now it's Josh McCown. The last quarterback who was active from that draft was David Carr, who retired 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And wasn't very good.
He was the first overall pick the year he came out. He was the number one overall pick.
Josh McCown, I think, was a third rounder. Is that what I read? I think he was a third rounder.
That's about right.
Josh McCown, this is, again, thank you to Ruben Frank, who dug all this up. Josh McCown has completed passes to 105 different receivers in his career, including Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah. Listen, that was his best year. McCown's best year was the year he spent in Chicago. Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald. Well, and he completed
Hall of Famer.
He completed a pass to Emmitt Smith.
Hall of Famer.
I guess Arizona, right? Didn't Emmitt end up in Arizona?
Yeah, that was where Emmitt ended his career.
If he gets into a regular season game with the Eagles, he will be the fourth 40-year-old in franchise history, the other three all being punters.
Yeah, Landetta probably being one, right?
Landetta was 43 when he wrapped it up.
Really?
Yeah. Lee Johnson and Sam Baker. So there you go. There's some good stats.
Yeah, and I think that the McCown signing is a good one. As I said, we were on Quick Slants on Friday with I was on with Barrett Brooks, and they put up the list of quarterbacks that are out on the street, and Barrett said to me, any of these guys interest you? And I said, you know, yeah, I would sign Josh McCown because I didn't know how willing he would be to walk away from a deal at ESPN. I thought maybe he was committed to retiring, but if he was willing to play, I thought that he was the best option out of all those guys that were there. And I'll tell you, even though he's bounced around a lot and he's never really played for any good teams, and you look at his stats and they aren't very pretty, he's a good player. I mean, he's not a bad player. I mean, I would take him straight up right now over Cody Kessler. I really would.
Fine.
So I really believe that this isn't a stopgap.
We're not exactly debating Steve Young versus Joe Montana.
No, by no means. But I mean, I think there's some people that thought that this was a real stopgap kind of 3-week deal, and I don't believe it is. I think McCown is here for the season. And he'll be be your number 2.
You don't commit $2 million to the guy to not. And that is the issue, that he's the number 2, because that's Doug Peterson, I think, was asked about it and kind of demurred on it, you know, assuming that Nate Sudfeld comes back, who's your number 2? Now, they paid Nate Sudfeld the equivalent of a second-round tender to stay.
Correct.
And they keep suggesting that they believe in Nate Sudfeld's future.
Mm-hmm.
So shouldn't Nate Sudfeld be your number 2?
But when's he going to be ready to play?
Okay, but let's say he's ready to play in, you know, middle of September.
That's probably pushing it. Well,
whatever. Let's say he's ready to play in October and Wentz is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the back half of the season. Wentz is healthy. Both of your backups are healthy. If Wentz gets hurt, are you going to go to McCown or Sudfeld? Because everything we kept hearing since they re-signed Sudfeld, let Foles go. You had to let Foles go. But since they re-signed Sudfeld is, no, we don't need to go against this. We believe in this guy as our future.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you grab Josh McCown out of retirement, are you telling me that he's ahead of Sudfeld in the order when everybody's good?
Well, let's see. Okay. Let's see how he performs.
Because I would like to believe that's Sudfeld's job when he's healthy.
Oh, are you going to keep McCown around as number 3, paying him that kind of money?
What are you paying Sudfeld?
Well, I'm just saying that, yeah, I mean, Sudfeld was here. I mean, you've already made that commitment to him. You're now spending $2 million to bring somebody in from the outside to be your number 3? I don't think so. I don't think so. And then what do you do with Thorson?
Depends on where the team is.
What do you do with Thorson?
You hope that you can sneak him through.
That's what I guess you're going to try and do. You're going to try and cut him.
Yeah.
Hope he doesn't get picked up and he slides to the practice squad, which is probably where he belongs anyway.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe this depends on where the team is, you know. If the team is if Wentz gets hurt and the team is 10-3 and you're going for a Super Bowl, you're going to look at it differently. If Wentz gets hurt early, or if the team is not that good, you know, or is it going to be a developmental year? Or do we want the old guy we can trust? The circumstances of the team probably play into the decision.
Certainly, and McCown's own state of readiness will play into it more than anything. But I will tell you, I think he's a guy that can come in and win a couple games for you. And this is the best team he's ever been on. And it's certainly the best group of playmakers he's ever played with. So, yeah, I think there's every chance that if you had to use him for part of a game or a game or two, I think he could come in and play pretty well.
So here's how I'll look at it today. If Wentz gets hurt, I'm knocking on wood.
Yep.
If Wentz gets hurt, and he's out for a game or two. Let's say this is October. Everybody's healthy. All three of your two backup quarterbacks are both ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, health is not an issue with McCown or with Sudfeld.
So,
okay,
so Sudfeld's back. He's healthy.
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
He's back. He's healthy. He's ready to go. Wentz gets hurt. if Wentz is out a week, 2 weeks, a couple weeks, I'm going to put in McCown. I'm going to put in the guy who's older, experienced. I think he's not going to screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
If Wentz is out for 2 months, that's when I think, you know what? It's time for Sudfeld to get his chance.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it's one of those deals where you go by what you've seen it on the practice field. And,
okay.
Yeah, coach, that's what coaches are there for, is to make those decisions. And they can gauge their own state of readiness. I bet, look at these guys and say, this guy's, which of these guys do we have a better chance to win a game with? And you go with that. But I think, I thought the decision to sign McCown, I wasn't sure they were going to go there, but I'm glad they did. I think he was a good pickup.
And by the way, somebody asked me what happens to Cody Kessler with all this. What happens with Cody Kessler is he goes through concussion protocol. When he gets healthy, you probably keep him around through preseason just in case one of the other guys gets hurt.
Correct.
But assuming that Josh McCown comes in, he's fine, he's ready, Thorson's ready, even with Sudfeld on not being ready to play, when it's cut down day, Cody, we hardly knew ye.
Yep, I think that's where this is going to go.
All right, 888-729-9494. We'll get Big Al and Mitchell in before you head out to see your play this afternoon. I'm going to stick around for pregame. 888-729-9494. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now back. Hey, Ray, I misspoke earlier. I think I said Smiley was pitching a. Jason Vargas is pitching
Jason
a.
Vargas.
So it's all different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Another soft-tossing left-hander, but...
Right.
I think... I will say this. I think you have a better chance with him than you do with
Vargas?
Smiley. Yeah, I
okay.
would say so.
There you go. They're going to win today.
They better.
Phillies win today off of Lucchesi. And by the way, the Phillies are using more of an A lineup. You know, every Sunday we come and do the show, so I usually stick around for the game.
Yeah, Real Muto hardly ever plays
right.
on a Sunday afternoon.
I've seen more Andrew Knapp this year than I ever would care to see.
That's never a good thing.
Right, Real Muto is playing today, and it's pretty much the A lineup. Sean Rodriguez is at third base, but other than that, it's pretty much the regulars. So that's a good thing.
Listen, they can't lose this game. You can't You can't lose another series at home to a bad team.
Right. You're trying
You've
to
already
gain,
done it to the White Sox.
Exactly. You're trying to gain some momentum here. You had a good week. Let's finish it on an up note.
Exactly.
You're correct. Big Al, South Philly, you're on 94 WIP.
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Yeah, I'm over here making gravy, listening to you guys. And last night the coach had a perfect opportunity to, the coach to go out to the mound, and when we had two strikes on the batter, like to calm the pitcher down, tell him not to throw the next three pitches near the plate. And he put up a lollipop. I don't understand this coach. Really, man.
I concur with you. I think the pitching coach is a poor match, both from a technical point of view and from psychological. Well, fine. The manager, if you want.
Yeah, because he's sitting at the end of the dugout, biting his fingernails. I mean, he could do this with hitters and like, just to disrupt the other team. Like to do what a manager should do. Like they've done it all throughout baseball. And they don't do it today.
I'm with you, Al. I'm with you. I mean, that sequence there of having two strikes, and three straight hitters, and you can't put any of them away and get out of the inning, that was just so exasperating.
What's going in the gravy?
What's going in the gravy? I'm getting ready to roll the meatballs up, put them in the gravy. I want to fry them first.
Yeah.
But my 12-year-old daughter, I just had her folding clothes, sweeping the floor, and she did the dishes. You believe it?
Wow.
Yeah.
You got things in order over there.
Well, I'm a roofer, and on the weekends I got to do the laundry, do all the housework, you know, and I'm trying to teach my daughter the right ways of doing things.
You're good for you.
You're a good man, and
well
you're
done,
a good
Al.
Dad. Nicely done. Can't tell you the last time my kids ever swept the floor when they lived with me.
Tell you, I could go over Big Al's for a little meatballs and gravy. That sounds
pretty
good to me.
Rolling the meatballs. Right?
Sounds
getting hungry.
Sounds really good to
me. It sure does. Jay in Mount Airy is with us. Jay, you're on with Ray and Glenn. Hey, Jay.
Yeah. Hello?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just had a question. I know that the Eagles just signed Josh McCown.
Right.
And you got to admit, he is not. And I understand, I heard you, Ray. You think he's the best one out there. But don't you think that he should at least brought Kaepernick in just to give him a go? Just to see if he had anything
if he lost it or did he have anything left in the tank before they just signed Josh McCown to that contract.
All you're looking for is a backup quarterback. That's all. That's all you're looking for. And this guy's been in this exact role that you're signing him for his whole career. Colin Kaepernick is a whole different ball game. If you're talking about everything that comes along with him, for somebody you just want to come in for a while and hopefully never have to see the field, they just don't want to go there with the Kaepernick thing. They just don't.
But that's the thing. We've seen Wentz take us almost all the way to. But we needed somebody that was definitely good enough to take us over the hump and then get us the end goal.
Jay,
in that situation again,
yeah,
we don't want that situation. But if we do, and the pieces that we brought in to get us to that situation goal again, wouldn't you bring in the best person that can get us there again?
Jay, I think that Colin Kaepernick obviously deserves a job in this league. He's, you know, if you want to say he's one of the best 64 quarterbacks, there's no doubting that. He hasn't played since 2016, but I think over time he could come in and help somebody. But I think this is not the situation. What had to happen and didn't happen is somebody should have signed him, brought him into camp, had a full camp. He probably should have been somewhere where there was an uncertain quarterback situation. He could compete for the job. Bringing him in as a backup to Wentz is really not what makes sense. There's an additional aspect here. I don't want to get into it too deep, but you understand there's bad blood between Malcolm Jenkins and Eric Reed, which suggests there's bad blood between Malcolm Jenkins and Colin Kaepernick. Remember when Eric Reed came in here last year and picked a fight? That all relates to Malcolm Jenkins' leadership with the NFL players and coming to an agreement with the commissioner over some of the social justice stuff, which Colin Kaepernick disagreed with. Again, that's kind of above and beyond. I am with you, Jay, in that I think Colin Kaepernick should be in the league, but I don't think this was the right situation, and that's all I got on that.
It
ain't fair what happened to Colin Kaepernick.
No.
And people who say, like, oh, it's because he's not a good enough quarterback. He is a good enough quarterback. He should be playing in this league.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the guys that are playing this summer. You mean to tell me he can't compete with these guys?
Right.
For sure he can.
And he's a better quarterback than Josh McCown. I'm not going to make that argument. But for right here, right now, what the Eagles are looking for, as you said.
It's all about a fit.
Yeah.
You know, and McCown fits this situation better than Kaepernick would.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's get, you know what? Let me get Eddie. I'm going to save Mitchell for the pregame. Tell Mitchell to hang in. We'll get him in the pregame. Eddie, South Philly, you're on with Ray and Glenn.
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you?
Hey, Ed.
Hey, Ed.
Real quick, I mean, the Kaepernick thing, listen, I think the man deserves a chance. I don't disagree with that, but when you bring a guy like that in, the media frenzy that follows it is also a part of it. That definitely plays a role in it.
Yeah, now, except I would also say to that, you remember Mike Vick?
Yeah.
Remember the media frenzy?
And that lasted 3 days.
Right. The media frenzy does die down soon enough.
I know that, but what I'm saying is the guy good enough? I don't know. Who knows? But I agree with you. I think he should have been brought in weeks ago to whatever team and given the guy a chance to go through a training camp and then do like a due process almost.
Yeah, yeah. This one right now is not the right fit.
I agree. Absolutely agree with you. But the reason I called is, Ray, I've always wanted to talk to you about this. You've been around the league for, I don't know, 50-plus years. I don't know how long exactly. But this preseason that we go through now, like where nobody plays, it's actually ridiculous. And I remember the times where the first game they would play a couple series. The second game they would play the first quarter. The third game they would play the first half. And then the fourth game they wouldn't play at all. And that was reasonable. But now they don't play at all. And for these teams to charge us as fans a full price, I think it's ridiculous.
Oh, I agree with you. And you know what? The commissioner agrees with you. There's nobody out there defending the quality of preseason football, because you can't. And the fact that they're charging people full freight and making them buy it as part of the season ticket package is ridiculous. It's always been ridiculous. But it's never been more ridiculous than it is now because the games
right.
are so non-competitive. I agree with
right.
you.
They don't play at all now. They don't even suit up.
No.
I mean, and I get it. I understand why they don't suit up, and I wouldn't suit them up either. But to charge us full price, to me, is asinine. And it's ridiculous. And it's not fair. It just isn't fair.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, the only thing that might happen is, and they have been talked about it, is rolling it back from four games to two games. And there is some sentiment for that. But The owners would lose money if they do that because they're going to lose the TV rights, they're going to lose the gate sales, and the owners don't want to lose money. But from a fairness standpoint and a fan standpoint, and even the players would agree with you that they would much rather do a two-game than a four-game preseason because there's really no point to at least half of these games that are being played right now.
Telling you, the best idea is the one I heard Mike Lombardi say when he was on with Angelo in the morning show last week, which is take these scrimmages that the Eagles are going to have against the Ravens the next few days, and all teams do, turn them into dramatic programming, almost like a Hard Knocks kind of thing, and sell those. And the NFL could look, they're not going to replace the gate that they lose, but they can just tack that on to the regular season. I don't think anybody would get that blown up out of shape. And the programming would be a lot more interesting. Yeah. But we'll see. Anyway,
I told you what my suggestion was. Play the games and put the quarterbacks in a red jersey
yeah.
so they don't get hit.
Well, you know what? I would take that as well.
Man, you at least got Carson Wentz on the field at least.
Yes. Okay, so Ray Dinger, you are off to the play. Who's who you got today?
I am. 3 o'clock today, it is Derek Gunn.
Mm-hmm, nice.
And 7 o'clock tonight, it is Michael Barkan and Seth Joyner.
Oh, you got great groups yeah. today.
Tuesday, Harold Carmichael, and Wednesday, Dick Vermeil. Fringe Arts Theater, come on by.
Tickets available?
Tickets are available.
Okay,
tickets
there you
are
go.
Available. So go to theaterexile.org and order your tickets, or just come to the door and buy them right there.
You brought up Dick Vermeil. You brought up Seth Joyner. So I'm going to plug that on September 25th, Wednesday evening. Those two guys, Vermeil, Joyner, and Ray Dinger, are going to join me. Well, not join me. I'm just going to moderate. I'm not claiming to be part of it. Smartest football conversation you ever heard. Big charity event for the Philadelphia School District Young Heroes program that I am putting on at the National Liberty Museum. For tickets, go to libertymuseum.org. Ray, have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Glenn.
I'm sticking around. Pregame coming up in a matter of moments right here on 94 WIP.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.